Okay, Melissa?
Yep.
Oh, good.
All right.
Finally. Okay, well, this time's a charm. So thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. So glad to be here.
That's great. Melissa, you write for the SB Nation TCU blog, Frog of War, which, first of all, is an awesome blog name.
Yes, it's very good.
In case you did or didn't come up with it.
I did not, but I will gladly take the credit for it in this moment.
As someone who used to write for an SB Nation site, you guys do a really good job of covering TCU over there.
Oh, I appreciate that.
How long have you been with Frogs of War?
I think we're going on my fourth season at Frogs of War. So I've been following the Frogs for a long time, since my days as a student when we were really, really bad. And it's been a lot more fun to write about them these last several years.
Yeah, I would imagine. Since Gary Patterson got there, you guys have been a pretty solid program.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we'll start off. Patterson's always been known for really good defenses, but the last couple of years, not so much. A lot of media are saying this is the defense is starting to look more like what Gary Patterson and TCU were used to. What do you think as a TCU fan?
Well, you know, I think that the generalizations that Patterson's defense has been terrible the last couple of years are kind of overstated. You know, it's really easy to say, oh, well, you know, it's a different conference now. It's a more wide-open conference. There's a lot more passing. But, you know, Gary Patterson and TCU never faced offenses like they do in the Big 12 on a week-to-week basis. And so there definitely was a period of adjustment. I think what we've just seen is kind of the ball bounced the wrong way. Frogs have still been in the top half of the Big 12 and regularly the top third the last several years since joining the conference in overall defensive metrics. When they struggled, which was, you know, kind of towards the end of that 2015 team season, when I think they lost over the course of this year something like 15 defensive starters to injury, and then they just weren't getting turnovers too. And while there's definitely an art form to coaching turnovers, there's also a certain amount of luck involved bouncing the right way that go into that as well. All that to say that heading into the early parts of 2017, you can see there's a little bit more of a ball-hawking mentality among the defense. It's a lot more veteran group. So these guys are really familiar with the calls. They're really comfortable making adjustments on the fly, and they don't get rattled easily. They aren't perfect. They had a really bad first quarter against SMU on Saturday, but it seems to be much more in the mold of a Gary Patterson defense in that they're very, very fast. They're very, very physical, and they fly to the ball in a way that we really haven't seen since the 2014 unit that was so special.
So speaking of the defense, obviously OSU's offense is high-powered, scoring really, really well. Faced probably their best defense of the year so far at Pitt and made them look silly. So what is TCU's defense going to be able to do to slow down OSU's offense?
Hope that Mason Rudolph has the flu and that the TCU offense puts up 65 points. I haven't seen anything out of OSU that makes me think that slowing them down is really an option. I think you either have to force mistakes or you have to pressure the quarterback in a way that nobody's been able to do to this point. It's not like getting OSU in first and 15s and second and 10s really phases this program very much. They can hit you for a 60-yard touchdown seemingly on every play. So the biggest thing for the Frogs, I think, is going to be to – you know, limit the run game, limit the effectiveness there that looks so, so solid early, to really mind their gaps and stay in their lanes defensively on the pass rush, and just to hope that, you know, Rudolph has kind of an off day. Maybe, you know, I don't even know that taking away James Washington is going to help when you look at the rest of the guys he's got surrounding them. This is going to come down to, you know, who plays mistake-free football. And the TCU defense will, you know, I think they'll be physical, they'll be aggressive. They're going to, you know, come after Rudolph on every play and knock him down and hopefully try to rattle him just a little bit. But at the end of the day, this offense is so good and so deep. It's going to be a matter of, can the Frogs slow them down enough? Can they get a key turnover? Can they force a fumble? Can they make a play in special teams just to give the offense a chance to come back and match them score for score? Because that's almost what you have to do, it seems like, in the early goings of the season at least.
So if there's one player in particular on the defense that could make a real impact for TCU, who would that be?
You know, I think that – you know, one of the guys that I'm going to be looking at this week is Ranthony Tejada. He's been injured and kind of nicked up the last 2 years, missed the season, and then just never really was fully healthy last year. He's the guy that's probably going to be matched up with James Washington most of the night, and that should be a really, really fun one-on-one battle. But the real difference maker for me is a transfer from University of Louisiana Monroe, Ben Benogo. He's a defensive end. He is freaky, freaky fast coming off the edge. And, you know, Oklahoma State has a really good offensive line, but this kid just makes people look silly on the edge. And if he can get in the backfield, live in the backfield, he does a great job of making plays in the running game, pressuring the quarterback, and does a nice job, too, of even dropping down in coverage every once in a while. So there's going to be a difference maker, especially early on. I think it's Big Ben, and he's going to have to be because the Frogs lost their other starting defensive end for a half due to a targeting call against SMU, Matt Boson. So a lot of it's going to fall on Bonogo's shoulders, and I think he's up for the challenge.
Okay. Turning to the other side of the ball, Kenny Hill was very up and down in his first season in TCU last year. How has he looked this year so far?
He's looked great. You know, he's had a couple of kind of silly interceptions. But overall, I think that, you know, Sonny Cumbie taking over the play-calling duties from Doug Meacham, who defected to Kansas, has really helped the Frogs in that they are leaning so much more on the running game than they have the past couple of years with great, great success. And what that's enabled Kenny Hill to do is just play within himself. You know, at Texas A&M and last year, he was a guy that was asked to throw for 500 yards a game for his teams to be successful. He doesn't have to do that at TCU this year. Got three running backs that are all outstanding, all have different skill sets, and are all capable of eating up yards in big chunks. You've got a receiving core that, you know, maybe the TCU doesn't have that great deep threat they've had in the past with the Josh Doctson and the Colby Listenby, but what they do have is a bunch of guys that if you can get them the ball in space can make a lot of people miss. There's a ton of speed on that offensive side of the ball, especially coming out of the slot. And so he's managed the game well and still thrown in the occasional explosive play or the play with his feet to keep defenses off balance. So he's smart, he's calm, he's relaxed. He's not trying to make the home run play. He's just trying to move the sticks, and he's done a really, really solid job of that so far this season.
So how did you guys feel when, speaking of Doug Meacham, quote, defecting, how did you guys feel when he left for Kansas?
You know, I did an interview with the Kansas SB Nation blog earlier this summer, Rock Chalk Talk, and I got a lot of comments about me having sour grapes and being sad that, you know, just feeling like Doug abandoned us. But at the end of the day, he was either going to leave or get demoted. He was not going to be the play caller in 2017, no matter how that went. And so Doug was great. You know, when he had Trayvon Boykin, when he had Josh Doctson, when he had Aaron Green, the way that he calls the game fit perfectly with their styles. But a lot of TCU fans felt that he didn't really make adjustments for the skill set that he had a year ago, especially. And it was a lot of square pegs and round holes. The big joke in our Frogs of War Slack channel is that anytime somebody brings up Doug Meacham or the offensive play calling, I have a panic attack thinking about the double reverse we ran on 3rd and 1 against Oklahoma last year in our own territory. Just the dumbest play call I've ever seen since the 2 fades on 3rd and 3 and 4th and 3 against Baylor in 2014 that cost us the game. Meacham's a great coach, but I think that his style was a little more aggressive than what TCU needed it to be. And I think that Cumbie and Looper have done a really good job of letting Kenny Hill play within himself, leaning on the ground game, and letting the TCU defense, which has been really good this season, get some rest and get some time on the sidelines so that they can come out and be really fresh. That's the difference maker. If you give Oklahoma State the ball, you know, for 35, 40 minutes on Saturday, you're going to lose. But if you can use the run game, if you can call a little bit more of a conservative game and take your chances when the moment arises, you have a much better chance of succeeding. And I think that's true not just for Saturday, but for the rest of the season. So Kansas, you can enjoy Doug Meacham. At the end of the day, you're still going to be a 2- or 3-win team. That's fine. But I am very happy with Sonny Cumbie and Curtis Looper so far on the TCU sidelines. And an underrated hire has been Sonny Dykes, who came over from Cal and has served as a real mentor up in the booth for those two young guys. And I think kind of helps the TCU offense feel really complete and rounded out compared to what it was a season ago.
Yeah, he hasn't made that big of an impact in Kansas so far. So.
Yeah. Well,
the first time I heard anybody say he was actually going to be demoted, like that's what was so shocking about it.
Yeah.
They realize that.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's not something. Gary Patterson is a pretty classy guy. And he wasn't going to go around saying, oh yeah, well, we were going to get rid of him anyways. That's just not his style. So at least with his own staff, I know he likes to talk smack about other coaches sometimes. But, you know, I think it just wasn't a good fit. And this program has been built on defense, like you said earlier, and it's always going to be a defensive-first program with Gary Patterson at the helm. And so when you're running an offensive style that really grinds on the defense, that's not going to last when you stop winning. And TC didn't win last year. So something had to be changed. It looks like it's a positive change. Meacham, I think, has desires to be a head coach, and I do think he will be a head coach and a really good one someday. It was time for him to go kind of spread his wings elsewhere. And we all know if he can win 6-7 games and get Kansas to a bowl, that he'll have his pick of a pretty decent job come 2018 or 2019 once they get some more talent in the stables.
2019 might be a bit generous.
Yeah, maybe okay, 2027.
There you go.
he's gonna be using AARP to get his hiring done, but it's fine.
You've been talking a lot about the run game and TCU's focus on the run game. Kyle Hicks is questionable for the OSU game. How do you think that's going to impact TCU's run game?
It's a huge hurt. Hicks came in very limited duty against Arkansas and looked really, really rusty. But his first touch against SMU was a 41-yard run where he ran over people, he ran through people, and he ran by people. He changes the game, not just from a running aspect, but from the passing game, too, because he's so effective out of the backfield as a passer. And he's a really good run blocker as a running back, too, despite the fact he's not a really big guy. So it hurts. You would like to have all four of those guys healthy going into, you know, what is obviously the biggest game of the season so far for both of these teams, but it looks like they're going to be cautious with Hicks and hold him out. That being said, Gary Sanderson is really, really good. This kid is one that people really enjoy watching, even people from the other team. He runs hard. He runs with a real chip on his shoulder. He's super athletic. He's super, super fast, and he's really strong, too. He's not the biggest kid, but he's pretty thick, and he knows kind of how to use his body in a way to squeeze through the tiniest holes or to lay the wood down when he needs to. Him combined with Shewa Oloniluwa is I keep practicing it. I'm having to say it a lot more because he's just really good, too. But he's a lot of fun. He's 6'3", 240 pounds, was a linebacker in high school. I think Gary Patterson secretly really wants him to play linebacker for him. I saw him on a play against SMU break out to the outside, sprint ahead to get the edge, and then hurdle a guy without breaking stride and take it another 5 yards down the field. He's just a brick wall with wheels. TC's been using him a lot in goal line packages. He scored I want to say now 3 touchdowns out of the Wildcat formation inside the 5-yard line. So I think we're going to see a trick play on Saturday using that formation. I'm not sure when, but if that opportunity arises, I think we'll see something fun come out of it. And then the X factor there is Kennedy Snell, who's a true freshman out of Waxahachie, which is just down the road from Fort Worth. He's just freaky fast. He scored 3 touchdowns on his first 5 possessions as a Horned Frog. And there's a lot of different things he can do. He can catch the ball out of the slot. He can catch the ball in the backfield. They use him in jet sweeps. They use him in just standard running plays. So there's still plenty of talent back there. Losing your senior in what is going to be a super, super rowdy, crazy environment up in Stillwater definitely hurts. But I don't think Kyle Hicks being out is any kind of excuse or reason that TCU can't be competitive Saturday afternoon.
Okay. One stat of note that I noticed at TCU, last year you guys finished the season with 37% efficiency on third down. This year you are second in the country so far with 66.6%. So what are you guys doing on third down that is making you so effective?
Well, you know, a big part of that is just that they're not facing third and longs. You know, last year it felt like so often that TCU was in a 3rd and 8 situation because either there was an incompletion on 1st or 2nd down, or the bane of our existence last year was false starts. Aviante Collins, who made the Minnesota Vikings, must have had 75 false starts, it felt like, over the course of the season. So there were a lot of reasons that down and distance didn't play in TCU's favor. But when you've got a run game that's averaging, 5, 6, 7 yards of carry like TCU's is right now, you find yourself in a lot of 3rd and shorts. And the pass patterns that they're calling, the way they're using the guys in the slot, these little hitch routes, these quick outs, these quick slants, these pitch plays and jet sweeps are really making manageable down and distance for TCU. And these little guys, Desmond White, Monte Turpin, and Kennedy Snell, if you get them the ball in space, they're really hard to bring down because they're just so fast. And so it's been manageable situations. It's been good decision-making by Kenny Hill. And it's just having a dearth of or a abundance of playmakers that don't need a whole lot of room to pick up 3 or 4 yards.
Okay. Good to know. So as far as wide receivers go, you said you don't have a marquee threat, but who is the best wide receiver for TCU?
You know, it just depends on the game. We've seen a different guy lead the Frogs in receptions all three games so far. Game one, it was Ty Splanina. That was a nothing game against Jackson State and was over after the first quarter. In game two, Desmond White seemed to get almost every single target. And then Saturday, it was Kevontae Turpin. And so the guy that to me is the most exciting and that TCU fans are the most excited about is true freshman Jalen Rager, another kid out of Waxahachie. He's a 5'11" kid. His dad, Monte Rager, played for the Colts, won a Super Bowl with them, played at Texas Tech, and was a defensive guy. So this kid has a defensive mentality and an offensive skill set, and Gary Patterson has been raving about him since he arrived on campus, and Gary never talks well about freshmen. He just doesn't do it. So you knew this kid was going to be special, and he's proven that. He had a big drop in the Arkansas game. He tried to go up for a touchdown catch one-handed and lost the ball. But then, he came back. He scored on that jump ball, at the end of the half Saturday against SMU when all the SMU defenders forgot to jump with him, and he got the easiest Hail Mary in history. But he also totally truck-sticked an official on about an 18-yard gain where he just flat – he saw him, and he was like, well, I got to keep going, buddy. You better move. The dude didn't move, and all of a sudden he was on the floor. So – he's the guy that I think is going to develop into TCU's best pure receiver and has a chance to be the best player we've had since Josh Doxson at that position. But right now he's still kind of learning the game and figuring it out and earning his way on the field. The guys that we thought were going to be big contributors, John DeArce, the senior from LSU, who was our leading receiver last year, Taz Williams, who was one of the top two or three wide receivers, JUCO wide receivers in the country, can't even get on the field. Right now for the Frogs, all those guys have kind of taken a back seat, and we're seeing guys like Dylan Thomas, who's a sophomore from just down the street at TCU at Pascal High School. He was targeted on four straight plays Saturday inexplicably. And then Desmond White, Kevontae Turpin, Kennedy Snell have played really big roles. So it's much like Oklahoma State, there's not one guy you can key on and say, okay, well, if we take him away, then they're going to be in trouble. But certainly not quite the size and speed that the Cowboy receivers have. They're playmakers. They're not going to win a lot of jump balls. They're not going to, beat you on a lot of fly routes down the sideline. But if you can get the ball in their hands, they tend to turn 5-yard gains into 15-yard gains really, really quickly.
Okay. So look ahead to next week. If TCU were to pull off the upset, what did they do to make that happen?
I think they probably forced two or three turnovers. They got a big momentum play, on something like force a fumble on a kickoff after scoring a touchdown. Kenny Hill's going to have to go for probably 300-plus yards with two or three touchdowns, no interceptions, and the rushing game's probably going to have to pile up over 200 yards on the ground in total. It's going to take the perfect storm of TCU playing their best game of the year and Oklahoma State looking mortal. I think this is a really good TCU team. I do. I think that they're talented on both sides of the ball. I think they have all the pieces in place to make a run at the Big 12 title. But I think going to Stillwater and upsetting an Oklahoma State team that looks like they can play with just about anybody right now is a tall task. So you're going to need to catch a couple breaks. You're going to need to see Mason Rudolph look human. And you're going to need a couple big plays in the turnover department, as well as playing a perfect game offensively on their side. The other little X factor in that is that the Frogs have yet to attempt a field goal this season. So if this is a close game going into the fourth quarter and you have an opportunity where it's a fourth and four and you're on about your 32-yard line, it's going to be really interesting to see what decisions Gary Patterson makes, because they can't afford to get those decisions wrong Saturday afternoon.
Okay. You got a score prediction?
Oh, man, it is so rare that I pick against TCU. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've done that in the last 4 years being with Frogs of War. But this is going to be one of those cases. I think we're looking at probably a 41-36 game. Let's call it that, a one-score game. TCU does what they can to kind of hold up that Oklahoma State offense, but at the end of the day, Mason Rudolph and James Washington are just a little bit too much for a TCU team that comes out feeling pretty good about themselves despite the loss and uses that as motivation to make a good run through the rest of the season.
Does TCU have a lot of seniors or more junior seniors or more freshman sophomores?
Very heavy veteran team this year. Last year we had 8 seniors, I think, in total on the roster, and only about 4 or 5 of those guys played. This is a very junior-senior heavy team, but unlike years past, it's not going to be a complete total fall off the cliff after this year, because the freshmen and sophomores and the incoming freshmen, if they hold on to that recruiting class, really, really strong as well. So they're starting to finally, you know, it took about 5 years, but starting to kind of finally feel like you don't have that drop off when you have a class of 20-something seniors graduate all at once that are all key players. But they returned, man, I want to say we returned like 17 or 18 out of 22 starters on the two sides of the ball. So very, very veteran group overall.
Okay. Are you going to the game or are you just going to watch from home?
I've really been vacillating on it. I have never been to a game in Stillwater, and I was hoping to get up there. I was real disappointed by the way Frogs came out Saturday, so I'm leaning more towards sitting this one out, watching at home. But I probably won't decide until Friday night, if I'm being honest, and then I'll just get take it late. I'll go with my gut. I went out to Arkansas. That was fun. But I don't want to go if it's going to be ugly, and that Oklahoma State seems so scary right now. I think we'll play well, but I don't want to make that drive home unhappy.
that's it's a long drive when you're not.
I had to do that at Oklahoma a couple years ago after a 7 p.m. kickoff time, and that last hour was pretty brutal in the car.
All right, well, thanks again, Melissa. You have been fantastic, and I appreciate you talking to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I hope we have a great game Saturday. I think it could end up being one of those instant classics, and I really, for one of the rare times in my life, I hope I am dead wrong about the final of that game. So, but I guess we'll find out.
All right.